What happens when the person who taught you to love words becomes the one you can't speak to? Macy Sorensen is 13 when she discovers a boy in the closet of her father's new weekend house. Not a horror story, a love story. Elliot Petropoulos sits cross-legged on the hardwood floor, thick-rimmed glasses sliding down his nose, completely absorbed in a fantasy novel with an emerald dragon on the cover. He's been using the empty Victorian house as his reading sanctuary, and when he scrambles to apologize for trespassing, Macy makes an offer that will change both their lives. "If we buy this house, you can come over and read if you want." His wide grin suggests maybe he was just warming it up for her all along. This chance encounter becomes the foundation of something extraordinary, a private world where books and words bind two lonely teenagers together through childhood, adolescence, and into a love that will survive tragedy, silence, and 11 years of separation. Their friendship deepens through a unique ritual, sharing favorite words that reveal their inner worlds. When Elliot learns Macy's mother died 3 years earlier, he doesn't offer pity. He asks about her favorite word. "Ranunculus," she says, her mother's favorite flower with its layered petals. He offers "regurgitate" for its scientific precision and gross humor. These exchanges create unexpected intimacy, each word a tiny time capsule marking their evolution. By 15, Macy notices Elliot's braces. By 16, she's acutely aware of his height and deepened voice. Their closet sanctuary, transformed with midnight blue walls and celestial decorations, becomes where they can be completely themselves. When Elliot finally asks about their relationship and they share their first kiss, it marks a thoughtful transition, both protective of what they've built. Throughout their relationship, language becomes the foundation of everything. When 17-year-old Elliot chooses ripe as his favorite word, his voice low and thoughtful, it carries layers of meaning that make Macy self-conscious. Her choice of epiphany reflects her growing awareness of their evolving dynamic. He introduces her to literary works by Anais Nin and Henry Miller, not merely for their provocative content, but to create space for discussing complex emotional and relational topics openly. Their conversations about these books reveal their desire for something deeper than surface-level attraction. They find the stories lack the emotional depth they're seeking. Email becomes another medium for their wordplay, filled with inside jokes and literary references. Even Elliot's teasing corrections of Macy's grammar become expressions of affection between two people who understand each other profoundly. Before their relationship becomes physically intimate, they've already shared countless meaningful conversations that prepare them emotionally. Their physical connection feels like a natural extension of their intellectual and emotional bond, another form of communication that expresses what they mean to each other. New Year's Eve of their senior year destroys everything. After Elliot essentially proposes, suggesting they'll be together through college and beyond, Macy dives to surprise him at a party. What she finds shatters her world. Elliot passed out with his pants at his knees and Emma naked across his torso. Someone casually mentions they have a history and just fuck around sometimes. Macy flees in tears. The tragedy compounds catastrophically. Her father, distracted by concern for his heartbroken daughter during their drive home, crashes into another car. Macy survives with a broken arm. Her father dies at the scene. In her mind, these losses become inextricably linked. Elliot's betrayal led directly to her father's death, creating a wound too deep to heal. Too numb to call Elliot, she moves to Minnesota with her aunt and uncle, letting them make decisions while she exists in a fog of grief. For 11 years, they have no contact. Elliot tries reaching her a million times after her number changes, but Macy has disappeared. This prolonged separation allows misunderstandings to calcify into seemingly permanent barriers. 11 years later, Macy spots Elliot in a coffee shop, recognizable by his dog-eared copy of Ivanhoe, a book he reads every October. The sight leaves her breathless. Despite her attempt to flee, they collide outside, and their decade-long separation hangs between them. When Macy tells him Duncan died, Elliot is stunned. She never told him. This encounter sparks a cautious reconnection. Elliot tracks her down at the hospital, reveals he's writing a novel, and shockingly, that he broke up with his girlfriend after seeing her again, calling her the love of his life. Though Macy insists she's engaged to Sean, the pull between them is undeniable. As they spend time together, the ease of their connection contrasts sharply with her relationship with Sean. Elliot predicts her food order perfectly. Their conversations flow naturally, filled with shared references. Yet they carefully avoid discussing what happened 11 years ago. The full truth emerges at Andreas's New Year's Eve wedding, exactly 11 years after their original split. After escaping into an olive grove and giving in to their long-suppressed desire, Elliot confesses, "It was years before I was with someone other than you." His words contradict everything Macy believed about his betrayal. Later, in their old reading closet, surrounded by her father's possessions, she breaks down completely and finally explains, "I knew it wasn't your fault, but for so long it felt like it was." The devastating truth emerges. Her father died the day after she found Elliot with Emma while driving to pick her up because she was upset. Horror and guilt wash over Elliot as he realizes she's blamed him for years. This confrontation allows them both to see that what appeared to be betrayal was actually tragic misunderstanding compounded by grief. The weight of 11 years begins to lift as they acknowledge the pain they've both carried and the love that never died. Healing requires creating a future together. Elliot surprises Macy by saying goodbye to their closet sanctuary. "We made this room special, not the other way around." They don't need their childhood refuge anymore. He helps her confront her abandoned Berkeley home, supporting her through collecting memories while planning ahead. When Elliot casually mentions putting a photo in our apartment, suggesting they move in together, warmth spreads through her chest. On March 1st, they move into their tiny one-bedroom during a rainstorm, surrounded by family building bookcases and unpacking boxes while his mother cooks. The apartment fills with bay leaves and roasting chicken as thunder rages outside. During the housewarming, Elliot pulls Macy aside, his face showing relieved delight. As they sway together, she envisions their future, falling asleep entangled, waking up wanting each other, morning routines of cereal and coffee. When Elliot whispers their familiar question, favorite word, Macy doesn't hesitate. "You." Their journey comes full circle, proving genuine connection can survive devastating loss and years of separation. Sometimes the path forward requires revisiting the past, not to live there, but to finally make peace with it. Their love was never about the physical space they shared, but the emotional one they created. A space that, once rebuilt, could exist anywhere.